This is your tech news briefing for Wednesday, October 12th. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. After years of chip supply shortages and soaring demand, the semiconductor industry is now dealing with something new, a grim outlook. Demand for smartphones and personal computers is slowing, and so is demand for the chips that they rely on. But memory chips aren't the only semiconductors out there. So what does the future look like for the broader chip industry? On today's show, our semiconductors reporter Asa Fitch joins us to discuss. That's after these headlines. A year after changing its name from Facebook, Meta is introducing ways to work in the metaverse. At its Meta Connect event yesterday, the company unveiled a new virtual reality headset, the Quest Pro. The face-mounted computer is aimed at professionals working in the metaverse. The company says it'll cost $1,500 and comes with substantial improvements over its Quest 2 headset, including a better display and the ability to track eye and face movements. At yesterday's event, CEO Mark Zuckerberg also announced a partnership with rival Microsoft to bring Teams and Microsoft 365 to the headsets. The Labor Department is proposing new rules that would make it easier for gig and contract workers to be designated as employees. The move could affect millions of these workers, as well as companies like Uber and DoorDash. The proposal released yesterday would use what the agency calls a multi-factor economic reality test to determine if a worker is truly independent. If adopted, it would roll back a Trump-era rule that made it harder for a gig worker to be counted as an employee under federal law. Our reporter David Harrison says the change has been a long time coming.
It's part of a long-running debate over how to classify gig workers. And in general, Democrats have been of the opinion that gig workers should be seen as regular employees. So this is basically something that the Biden administration said, even going back to the campaign, that they would focus on. And if this rule is finalized, then if it survives a legal challenge, it might mean that more workers would be classified as employees. But before we get there, there's an awful lot of rulemaking and likely litigation.
NASA confirmed yesterday that its first test of a system for protecting Earth from a catastrophic asteroid hit worked. The Double Asteroid Redirection Test, or DART, took place in late September when a spacecraft smashed into a distant asteroid. NASA says the impact changed the rock's trajectory, reducing its orbit around another asteroid by 32 minutes. NASA Administrator Bill Nelson called it a watershed moment for humanity.
All of us have a responsibility to protect our home planet. After all, it's the only one we have. And this mission shows that NASA is trying to be ready for whatever the universe throws at us. I believe that NASA has proven that we are serious as a defender of the planet.
Crypto exchange Bittrex has agreed to settle two enforcement actions against it for allegedly violating sanctions and anti-money laundering laws. The Treasury Department said Tuesday the company would pay fines totaling $53 million. They're the largest actions to date against a crypto firm by the Treasury's Office of Foreign Assets Control. Representatives from Bittrex didn't respond to a request for comment. Meanwhile, America's oldest bank is now holding crypto. BNY Mellon says it began receiving select customers' Bitcoin and Ether this week, with plans to expand later. It'll store the keys required to access and transfer the assets and provide bookkeeping services. The move makes BNY Mellon the first large U.S. bank to safeguard digital assets alongside traditional investments. And the restrictions on U.S. semiconductor exports to China that we told you about last week are expected to set back the country's efforts to develop some advanced technologies. The rules unveiled Friday by the Biden administration require U.S. companies and the companies using U.S. technology to get a license to export advanced chips and chip-making equipment to China. News of the new rules drove down shares of Asia's biggest chipmakers and suppliers Tuesday, including Taiwan Semiconductor and Samsung. Our Asia Tech reporter Dan Strumpf says the new restrictions go further and cover more ground than previous ones.
They don't target specific companies, although some companies are specifically named as targets. In terms of the specific aim, ultimately, this comes down to reining in China's military ambitions. I mean, much of the targets of some of these new rules focus on things like supercomputing. They focus on advanced memory chips and advanced logic chips and just advanced chips in general.
To hear more from Dan, check out yesterday's AM edition of our sister podcast, What's News? Speaking of semiconductors, demand for memory chips is falling. Should the makers of those chips have seen this dip coming? We'll discuss after the break.
This year's been a roller coaster, and not the fun kind. Business, no. It's a dangerous time not to know your numbers. That's why you need NetSuite by Oracle. Over 31,000 businesses have the confidence they need. NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing offer. Head to netsuite.com/Wall Street.
With inflation high and economic uncertainty on the rise, more customers are putting big purchases, like personal computers, on hold. Shipments of PCs fell nearly 20% in the third quarter, the fastest pace in decades, according to research from Gartner. That's having a knock-on effect on an essential part of those devices, memory chips. Semiconductor makers, including Samsung and Micron, have issued grim forecasts, lowering their profit estimates. So, what does this mean for the broader chip market? Joining us to discuss this is our semiconductors reporter, Asa Fitch. Hi, Asa. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You know, when we say memory chip demand is falling, how much of a dip are we actually talking about?
It's a pretty substantial dip. The average price for the type of RAM that goes into flash drives and things like that has fallen about 28% in the third quarter compared to the prior quarter. Computer memory, the kind of memory that helps apps run faster on your phone or computer, that has fallen by about 15% quarter to quarter in the past quarter. So it's been a pretty substantial drop and a pretty quick drop.
Can you tell us a bit about what the market and competition is like for memory chips?
The market in memory is very volatile. It has a lot of ups and downs. You know, it's really tied to consumer demand more than even other parts of the computing and electronics industry are. So if you see fluctuations in smartphones or in PCs and things like that, memory just tends to go up and down a lot more. It's a more commoditized item, electronic item within that overarching sort of electronic supply chain. So as a result, it's kind of treated almost like a commodity and it goes up and down quite a lot.
I guess maybe now is a good time to kind of get into what segment of the semiconductor market memory makes up and if this slowdown is hitting any other segments of that industry.
Yeah, memory is around 27% of the overarching semiconductor industry's estimated revenues this year. So that's a pretty substantial amount. The slowdown we're seeing is affecting other parts of the industry, though. Demand for all kinds of chips is in jeopardy because of consumer sentiment, because of rising interest rates, spending power is being challenged. So we're seeing that kind of broader economic effect basically trickling into all sorts of things like PCs, like laptops.
What have the manufacturers of memory chips said about this slowdown?
Well, manufacturers of memory chips are generally just, you know, they're used to this kind of slowdown because the memory industry is very cyclical. This one comes at a difficult time in that a lot of companies want to grow their production. There are incentives all over the world for people to expand their factory footprints, and companies like Samsung and Micron, who are some of the biggest memory manufacturers in the world, are building new plants. They're growing. Both of those companies are making huge investments in the U.S. We're talking to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars. So, you know, it's kind of an awkward time for prices to go down, and executives are saying that they're kind of bracing. They're doing things in the short term, like slowing down capital spending, just being more conservative in how they use their money. At the same time, they are continuing to invest for the long term, continuing to think about huge outlays of capital on major expansions of their operations. So it's kind of a mixed bag in that sense, too. The short term is bad, but the long term potentially could be quite good because people see that the demand is there from all kinds of things, from autonomous driving to, you know, newfangled AR, VR stuff that's going to consume more chips and need more memory.
I mean, so given, as you say, this is a volatile segment of the market, when do the big players expect to see this turnaround? And I guess in some ways, should they have seen this coming, given the massive spike in demand that happened during the pandemic for consumer electronics?
Yeah, you know, a lot of people have been sort of predicting the downfall of the chip market for a long time because it is cyclical. And, you know, it was time for a cycle to happen for, it's been time for a long time. So maybe to some extent they should have seen it coming, and some did kind of see it coming in that respect. But if you ask analysts, they seem to expect that the market, at least for computer memory, will bottom out in the first half of next year and then, you know, start to pick up again. But this market is really unpredictable. And as we were talking about before, it's very susceptible to the fluctuations in consumer demand and the overarching macroeconomic picture. So there are a lot of contingencies in those forecasts. It's hard to say whether the first half of next year really will be the bottom or whether there could be a longer slump for the industry.
Hey, so you're talking about this slowdown in demand. Does that mean the chip shortage that we've been talking about for, you know, what seems like years is finally over?
You know, strangely enough, it doesn't. There are still a lot of segments of the chip industry that are in shortage or that have longer lead times that are just stretched because there are areas where chip demand is still very strong. If you look at the automotive industry, for example, automakers are still having trouble getting the chips that they need. Other people who make medical devices and other kinds of gadgets and electronics still are having problems. So what we're seeing now is that there are some chips in the, not to use a pun, but there's some chips in the armor of the chip shortage story, but it's still happening because the demand is affecting certain chips like CPUs and GPUs and sort of higher end computing, the brains of your computers kind of thing. But that kind of fall off in demand and consumer sentiment we're seeing isn't affecting sort of older generation chips and different sort of commoditized chips that automakers and other folks need. So it's become a more of a mixed picture, whereas previously it was just a general shortage and that was affecting everybody.
All right, Asa Fitch, our semiconductors reporter, we'll have to leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
And that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. If you want more tech stories, check out our website, wsj.com. And if you like our show, please leave us a 5-star rating and a review. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
I'm Paul Gigot, and you can join me, Kim Strassel, Kyle Peterson, and our colleagues on the Potomac Watch podcast each Monday through Friday. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button on your favorite podcast app.